So, as we speak about this subject, it's critically, critically important that the lost spirit survive now, because there's nothing left to support Hawaii except tourism. Everything else has fallen by the wayside. The unionization that was necessary with the sugar plantations and so on 100 years ago was a really good thing back then. It's not a good thing anymore. It's disastrous for Hawaii, because it's driven the prices up so high for everything. The shipping is completely managed under a unionized law from 1928. You can't bring anything to Hawaii except on an American ship that was made in America with an American crew. And then you're going to have people unloading from the Teamsters Union and so on. And if any of those people are on strike or anybody wants to get their way, they can easily get it. And the people in Hawaii are literally paralyzed if there's a shipping strike. Every bag of rice in every store will be sold, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if we didn't have that anymore, which is impossible to change right now under the current system, but if, for instance, Hawaiians got their sovereignty, and we'll talk about that a little bit too, if they got their sovereignty, that doesn't mean they own Hawaii. It means they are a group within a group, like 534 Native American tribes and groups are recognized as sovereign groups. So you're driving down the road and it says entering such and such territory, and then you keep driving 10 miles and it says leaving such and such territory. But those people have their autonomous rights, they have their own courts, they have their own wildlife officials, they have their own game laws. They have a lot of things that they can do autonomously. And if Hawaiians had that, they could have their own shipping at their own ports. And you know what that would do to the prices in Hawaii? It would lower them by two-thirds overnight. Literally, you'd have ships coming from all over the world with all kinds of goods. The Hawaiians were smart. They'd have low tariffs, low docking fees and everything else. They wouldn't have unionized dock workers. And man, you wouldn't believe what would happen to Hawaii's economy. And with other things, too. So getting back to the subject at hand, the aloha spirit is something that's been part of Polynesia for centuries and centuries, but became particularly prominent in Hawaii, isolated way out in the middle of the ocean from the other cultures for maybe 300 or 400 years when they quit voyaging back and forth. They were just isolated. And what that meant was, as in other cultures too, if somebody's going by your house, people go, "Hey, Komaiai," that means come over here and eat. Come over here and eat. We're going to share whatever we've got with you. If you were traveling down the road and it got dark at night, you just stop somewhere, knock on the door and say, "You know, could I stay in your shed?" Or say, "Oh, no, just come on in, you know, stay, sleep on our couch," or something. And by the way, you can marry my daughter if you like. I mean, literally. And so from the very beginning, Hawaiians were just intermixing with foreigners very freely, intermarrying, you know, sleeping with, whatever you want to say. That was perfectly normal, just absolutely perfectly normal within Hawaiian culture to be very inclusive. That means anybody who comes along, you include them in your group, your family, your doings, your ceremonies, whatever. They're inclusive. And a lot of the Native American tribes, partly because they were constantly warring with each other and had to stay separate and very tribal to stay alive, are very exclusive. You don't get to come in. You don't get to see our ceremonies. You don't get to eat our food unless we specifically invite you. And in fact, if you came on our territory in the old times, you might very well get killed. And you don't just get to marry anybody you want to, and we're not going to give you this and that. And so that's called exclusive cultures, and there's plenty of those around the world. But that's partly, as I say, because of the conditions of that society. But Hawaiians had a lot of goodies. They had a very, very fertile place to live. It grew food very, very easily, so there was always lots of food, unless you had a terrible famine because of a terrible drought or two hurricanes in a row or something like that. They did have horrible times like that, famines. But most of the time, it was kind of fat city as far as food. It wasn't too hard to get food most of the time. So under those kinds of circumstances, it's easy to be inclusive and say, "Come on, my AI, come on in and we'll feed you whatever we've got." And if everybody is being pretty darn peaceable, which was most of the time, except when they were having wars, but after Kamehameha got all the islands conquered around 1810, then there was peace all around the Hawaiian Islands. You didn't have to have warriors anymore. People weren't fighting here and there. People didn't have to have shelter caves and foodstuffs hidden away and all kinds of things like they did in the old warring times. So that entered a time where you could have more and more time to have the aloha spirit. People could plant their crops, they could harvest the crops, they could pay taxes to the government, so to speak, and make them very functional, which then went back to the people and the overseers and so on. So the aloha spirit is that magical, magical spirit where somebody sees you stop along the road, they're going to just stop. They're not going to worry about you might hurt them or you don't, they'll say something bad to you. No, they're going to stop and help you. You look a little bewildered on the corner, somebody's going to come over and help you and tell you where to go with a smile on their face. And when you go into a shop, somebody goes, hi, aloha, and starts talking to you. They don't look over this way and over this way and keep reading their book. They interact with you and they smile and they talk to you. So we all feel that when we go to Hawaii, no matter where you go, at least even now, largely to me, you still see that aloha spirit all the time. Whereas if we're over here at the lakes fishing, dead horse ponds, we're over there fishing, and me and like Wes, her husband, is there every day, and people are walking around the ponds, right? They're walking their dogs, they're walking with each other and so on. People like me and Wes go, hello. Not even a glance. Not even turning their eyes to you a lot of times. That's the opposite of the aloha spirit. Wes and I are showing the aloha spirit. Those people are just like off in another world. They've been raised not to talk to other people or something, but it's bad. I don't know where it comes from, but it's really bad. And Wes occasionally, if he says hello to them several times, says, go back to California. And that isn't far from the truth. People are exiting California like crazy, but they're bringing their California mode of life here and acting the same way. In a big city aloofness and I don't even know my neighbor kind of stuff. So anyway, that's an example. But so what we do here is we all show aloha spirit all the time. We're always smiling at each other. We're always talking to each other. We're always sharing life experiences with each other. If something happens to one of us, if we're sick, we have a tragedy, we're all together on that. We're all sympathizing with each other. We're all sending notes or making calls, asking about the other person. We care about each other like a big family, right? That's all the aloha spirit. So when we get together like this, we have our pule together, right? When we hold hands together, that's a lay of people. Got a continuous lay of people. So that has its special values too, because when you're holding hands like that, you're sharing your mana, your spirit, whatever you want to call it. You're sharing that with the people on each side of you. And so that has a special quality too about it. Human touch, all those sorts of things. So when I go around, you know, when I come in the halau, I go around honi. Honi means a hug or a kiss, right? I honi everybody. I've been trying to teach my hula brothers to do that with little success for years now. But you notice I always do that. Because that means a lot to me. Every time I hug one of you, I'm getting a little of your mana, your warmth, your aloha. And hopefully you're getting some of mine in return. We're sharing pili together. That means close-knit together, pili together. So those things have their value. They have their unique value. And there are plenty of psychological studies on things like that that show clearly the children that are raised with a whole lot of holding and touching and talking and loving expressions, people looking in their eyes, so on, oftentimes, in fact, most of the time, end up better than children who are raised in real cold environments without that loving and nurturing and closeness and so on, holding. So in Hawaii, you're kind of surrounded by that sort of thing all the time, by a whole lot of people. And miraculously enough, a lot of the people who aren't Hawaiian also adopt the Aloha spirit in Hawaii. Or maybe they've only got a little smidgen of it, but it really doesn't matter because the society has become so intermingled while retaining the values of old-time Hawaiian culture, a kumamai ai, you know, that you find that all over the place. Not always, but, you know, you find the Filipino shopkeeper and the Japanese shopkeeper and the Chinese shopkeeper and anybody else. You may walk in there and get a great big smile and all kinds of service, and you get to find out about them and learn the name of their little boy who's running around there, hopefully behaving himself. If any time a little boy is behaving himself, that's a miracle right there. So, anyway, that's the famous Aloha spirit. So what's also famous was hula. You know, that was carried all over the place, especially to the mainland back in the 1920s. So all kinds of steel guitar, all the playing, the ukuleles, and all the songs, in or not in Hawaiian, just went all over the place and enormously popular because there's something soothing about that music. And the Hawaiian language itself is filled with soft vowels. It's a really, really pleasant, wonderful language. And so when you sing with that, or you speak with that, you have just a soft voice, as opposed, say, to German, with a bunch of S's and Z's and hissy sounds, you know, clipped talk, and so on. So it's easy to even smile while you're singing Hawaiian. It's easy to do that. And so all those things go together more and more and more to multiply the magical stuff of Hawaii. And then you've got the air and the palm trees and the soft breeze and the beautiful ocean and all these other things that mix together. So let's hope that cooler heads prevail and that the Hawaiian Aloha spirit will not fail. But if it does, to some degree, there's a whole lot of people like us all around the world. There's hula halaus all around the world now. I heard 10 years ago there were more halaus in Mexico than in Hawaii, which I couldn't believe there was any of them in Mexico, but that's what I heard. And there's lots of them in Japan. I mean, kumahulas go over there all the time to teach, and I've watched the Japanese dancers get better and better and better and better and emote more and more and more and more. 20 years ago, they were awesome as far as perfect management. I mean, dance absolutely exactly the same, every single one of them, just perfect dancing, but like this, no emotion. Now I see they're just emoting like crazy, just like the people in Hawaii. So they've learned that from watching the videos and wanting to be like that, and from the kumus going over there encouraging them to be like that. And the kumus like this, who encourage you to be like that. You know, let it out. Let your emotions come out. Express yourself. Enjoy the hula. So those things are helping spread things around too and spread the magic of the Aloha spirit. So what can we do? We just do exactly what we're doing. And I hope you're doing the same thing. You know, as long as you feel safe doing it. If somebody's stopped along the road, ask if you can help, or at least roll the window down and say, can I help you? Can I make a call somewhere for you or something? Or if somebody needs some help somewhere, you know, they dropped something at the store or they're fumbling around trying to get in their purse or they can't find their car in the parking lot, whatever, help them. You know, be altruistic, help them. So she gets annoyed at me because I'm always trying to help people. But that's just the way I am because I notice those things. And so my tendency is to go, can I help? Can I help you? So.